And this is the speaker meeting on the topic of the history of NA. And I'd like to say something briefly about these three speakers. You know, it's not just they're people talking about history. They actually are our history. Marlene was the one who pretty much started public information back in like 81, 82 and shined a light of NA out there when in the darkness when nobody even knew we existed. And Eric over here is—he was involved in from the dawn of the Susquehanna area, involved in the region, and ended up being involved at World Services and being the representative to the World Service Conference for our region from 1997 to 2000. And all going good, this spring he'll have 38 years clean. And then Randy is also was helped back in 81. He came in March 10th, 1981. So he's got a 44th anniversary coming up soon. And what he did is he helped to set the ground for what is now Baltimore NA and all outside of that with a handful of others like Shelley and Vince and Marlene. And he also then went on to be involved with World H&I and to be the chairperson of the World Service Office Board of Directors and a representative for our region at the World Service Conference. So these are people that really have a lot of information. They also brought a lot of information, old stuff from the early 80s. If you're interested in looking at it afterwards, please come up and do so. And with that, I'll start with our first speaker, which is Eric H.
My name is Eric. I'm an addict.
Eric.
And this is always kind of overwhelming to me. Oh, okay. Now I'll try to settle down again. It's always overwhelming to me. I'm not a very outgoing or sociable person. I have a tough enough time with regular conversations, so putting me in front of a room like this is very overwhelming. In case you noticed from Mark's introductions, I am kind of the baby newcomer of this crew, so that's a little overwhelming too. And of all the people in Narcotics Anonymous that I've had on pedestals over the years, Randy's the one that I'm still kind of intimidated by. So this is a lot to hit at one time. When I'm nervous, I talk pretty fast, as you probably already noticed. I really can't help it, so hang on tight, and hopefully I'll be able to cover a lot of information. I do like to talk about the history of Narcotics Anonymous. I like to learn about it. I've read a lot about it. A lot of what I'll talk about is secondhand. A lot of what I'll talk about is stuff that I heard at workshops, stuff that I've read from literature and publications from World Services. If that bothers you, stick around, hang tight. Randy will come up and tell you, because he was there for a lot of it. He can tell you what happened in the room. And I think what I want to focus on is, first of all, Randy and Marlene both got here about 1981, right around that time. And if I had not been a hardhead, if I had listened, I could have got here in 1981. In 1981, I got arrested for two counts of possession and kicked out of school. And they sent me to a juvenile counselor up in Bel Air. And this woman told me about Narcotics Anonymous. I was 15 years old, and she told me about Narcotics Anonymous. And I look back, and that amazes me, because at that time, they had about half a dozen meetings in the state. And she told me about Narcotics Anonymous, and I could have gone then. There were about a half a dozen meetings in Maryland, and there was one actually in Edgewood. Now, I've seen schedules that came out around that time that had eight meetings. It was when they had eight meetings. They finally had one every night of the week, and there was one in Edgewood right next to where I live in Joppatown. So there was right there. All I had to do was show up, and I didn't. Because they said the fellowship was called Narcotics Anonymous, and I thought, well, I don't do narcotics. I only do marijuana, alcohol, THC, barbiturates, amphetamines, cocaine, LSD, and PCP, but not narcotics. So I don't belong there. So I stayed out there for six more years, finally got here at 21. So anyway, I'm like I said, I'm not a very outgoing and sociable person. I was not a very together-we-can kind of guy when I got here. Mm-hmm. So I was very dependent on literature. So I think that's what I'm going to talk about a pretty good bit today is literature. Mm-hmm. I'm very grateful that the basic text was here when I got here. I latched onto that. And I think I bought a basic text like about a week clean, went to a meeting and bought it from the secretary and paid him for the book. And he saw me the next night at the meeting. He said, did you read any of that book? And I said, yeah. And he said, well, what part of it? And I said, well, all of it. And he said, I don't sleep much. So I took the book home and read the whole thing in one night. So as weak as I was with people, I was strong on literature. So I latched onto that to start with. So literature history for the first 20 more years, all we had was the white booklet. And I think sometimes we overlook the power of that book. That's a powerful, powerful piece of literature. And stop and think about it. People stayed clean for over 20 years on just that booklet. So that's a powerful piece of literature right there. And then in the late 70s, they started working on the basic text, and it was written by people without a lot of clean time. If you read the history of the basic text, there were a handful of people that had 6 or 10 years clean, maybe a few, but most of the people were just anybody who cared to show up was welcome to write the book. And you can kind of tell that it was written by a lot of people that were not skilled writers, professionals, or educated people. And that's great, because when I read the basic text, I stuck my head in that book, and it felt like home. You know, it's like, as much as I like some of our later literature, and as much as it's very professional and well-written and very well done, I still look at that basic text, and it felt like, you know, I stuck my head in there, and these are my people. You know, it's like it felt like exactly, you know, the stuff in that book was what was going on in my head. So I was very comfortable and latched onto that. There were some controversies I was reading through before the meeting started. I've got a history of literature that the literature chairperson put out in 1989. They were getting ready to take another run at writing It Works Out and Why. And they were looking back at everything they had done so far. And I talked about how right off the bat, as soon as the basic text came up for approval, there were controversies. There were a couple of changes made by World Service leadership that people had a conniption about. And there's a story right here that it talks about how the World Literature Chair got so angry that he ripped the basic text in half in front of the conference during the WSO report. So they had some issues with the basic text, but it had a tremendous impact on the fellowship. You know, the growth of the fellowship in the 80s was astronomical. You know, the book made a big difference. They immediately started working on It Works How and Why. And they started having workshops very similar to the ones they had with the basic text. And so they started working like that. They eventually put together a draft in 1985. It's a blue draft. I think Randy's actually got a copy of it over here. And they put that together, writing it very much like the basic text, and they decided to backpedal on that, and some of the World Service leadership decided they wanted to have more influence on it. And so at first they actually got a professional writer to work on it a little bit, and that didn't work out so well. They decided they didn't like the professional writer and what they were doing, so they pulled it back and got more directly involved themselves. And they put a lot of their own stuff in there, and that became a 1987 draft. After the 85 draft didn't get approved. And if you read the two of them, a lot of the differences between 85 and 87 is that people with a lot of experience in recovery kind of injected their own experience into the book. You know, like there's one story I know particularly in the third step, talks about how, you know, it's talking about the general NA literature. This is how the third step works, and kind of a, you know, an educational kind of thing. And all of a sudden, and one of our members had this experience like this, and he talked about how when he worked his third step, he actually went and prayed with somebody else for a loving God to come into his life. And I've heard that story because I know the guy, I know who wrote it, because I've heard him speak at conventions and tell the exact same story. So the 87 draft, they put a lot of their own personal experiences in there. And then there were some controversies when that came up for approval at the conference. Some people didn't like the way it was written. They didn't like the fact that World Service leadership had taken more control over it at the end. They thought it should be done like the basic text, with wide open workshops full of people with very little clean time. And the fact that a professional writer had even touched it tainted it. You know, a lot of people thought that because a professional writer touched it, they didn't want anything to do with it. So it actually got shot down. I actually saw the motion in here. I think it got shot down like 50 to 20, you know, and didn't get approved. At that point, they decided to start over again. So they took all the 85 draft and the 87 draft and used that as input to start writing it again. And at that point, one of the guys from our region became the chair of the ad hoc committee on It Works How and Why, and was working actively with that. And at that point, I got clean. And one of the first things that I got involved with is, like a lot of people, I got pulled into service pretty early on. Started going to area service my first year. And right after my first anniversary, the night of my first anniversary, the guy who was ASR at that time, it's what they call RCM now, you know, he was getting ready to move, and he couldn't continue the commitment, and he asked me if I was interested in being an ASR. So at like, you know, 13 months clean, I became an ASR, and they sent me to the Chesapeake and Potomac region. And one of the first things that happened was that the regional lit committee, the regional lit chair, approached me and said, "We're working on this book. If you want to come, you can be a part of that." And so they were working on traditions 10, 11, and 12, chapters for It Works How and Why. What had happened is the plan when that ad hoc committee took over was they were going to assign steps and traditions to various regions. Like they would assign steps 1, 2, and 3 to this region, and steps 4, 5, and 6 to this region. And traditions 10, 11, and 12 got assigned to the Chesapeake and Potomac region. And we worked on that for about a year, and we actually finished our drafts. We actually wrote them. I still got them at home. I thought about bringing them today. And we did a pretty good job. I look back at them, and you know, we really did well. And that was, I talk about that a lot because it was an important part of my recovery. I always follow through by saying that nothing we wrote ended up in the book, so don't grab a copy of It Works How and Why and look for the part that I wrote, because it ain't there. They used nothing in the final version, but it was a huge experience for me. You know, I got a chance to be exposed to people with a lot of clean time, with a lot of involvement and activity and knowledge about Narcotics Anonymous, and that really plugged me into the fellowship more than anything else had up until then. You know, at that point, I had one foot in each fellowship. I was still going to AA to play things safe, because I wasn't sure if this one was going to make it or not. And so that's the group that kind of convinced me that Narcotics Anonymous was a fellowship that could stand on its own, that you could recover in Narcotics Anonymous, you could stay clean here and didn't have to go anywhere else. And so that literature committee and that regional service committee played a huge role in that in my life. I've recently just gotten back in touch with somebody who was on that literature committee. At that time, she was like a college kid with a couple of years clean, you know, working on a literature committee because anybody could come. She's now a professor at a university with a PhD. She's a literature professor. So we sometimes talk about our literature is not written by professionals and educated people. Well, sometimes it's not mutually exclusive. You know, we've got members of the fellowship now that are extremely educated professional people. And so that was, I find that interesting that somebody from the regional literature committee at the same time I was is now a college professor. So anyway, they kind of, once again, they swept all that away. So if you're counting, that's the third draft of It Works How and Why that didn't make it to the publication. So we started in 83, and the book didn't get published and get on the tables until 1993. We spent 10 years working on that book with three false starts. And so anyway, 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm running out of time real fast then. Good thing I do talk fast. So anyway, they got the book published in 1993 after 10 years, and that was a huge moment of maturity for the fellowship. You know, one of the reasons why I was unsure about this fellowship is because we didn't have a Steps and Traditions book. You know, as long as we didn't have the Steps and Traditions book, I felt like we weren't really grown up yet. And that book made me feel like we were at NA come of age at that point in my mind. Our regents had people involved with literature projects. I wanted to really be involved with the World Lit Committee and didn't get a chance. I got nominated as RSR alternate at the first Free State Regional Service Committee and got shot down. The guy that was my sponsor at the time got elected, and he got to live my dream. You know, he got elected RSR alternate, got on the World Lit Committee, and he was there on the World Lit Committee when they wrote It Works How and Why, the Just for the Day meditation book. And then I got a chance sometime a few years after that to get elected RSR alternate and go to the conference. And the guy that was the delegate the same time I was his alternate was on the World Ed Committee, and he worked on the step working guides. He was an active member of the World Ed Committee, a guy named Steve M., who I have heard, if Facebook is accurate, he just passed away this week. So we've had people from this region right here local that have been active members of the literature process, you know, including the guy that was the chair of the ad hoc committee on It Works How and Why, the guy that worked on It Works How and Why and Just for the Day, and Steve, who worked on the step working guides. And so this region has played an active part in literature development in Narcotics Anonymous. And so anyway, my part in that was very small. I feel like I said, you know, Randy and Marlene are like the ones that have been here for the long haul, and I felt like I was really intimidated at this meeting. And hopefully somebody got something out of that. If you want to hear more about literature, about history of any kind, there's an area in Tennessee called the Upper Cumberland area of Narcotics Anonymous. And if you go to their website, they have got every historical document in the history of the fellowship from the founding document in 1953 up to the most recent minutes of the World Service Conference. I think that's where Greg P. went to live after he was done at World Services. I think he went and lived in Tennessee for the last years of his life. And he, I think he left him his archives because they've got everything. They've got it all. And I got a chance to, one last thing and I'll wrap it up. The last year I was at the conference was the year 2000, and they had a big celebration that year of the 25th anniversary of the World Service Conference. They had the first World Service Conference in 1975. I actually got minutes from that. I wasn't there, of course, but I got they passed out copies of the minutes at that workshop at the World Service Conference. And if you look at those minutes from the first World Service Conference, it looks more like an area service committee. You know, it's like there's 20 people there, and they got about a $500 bank balance, and Jimmy Kay still holds about half the service positions. He was chair of the trustees and chair of the WSO board of directors and the treasurer, and so it was like that Bugs Bunny cartoon where he runs around and plays all the bases in the softball game, you know. So anyway, they had this big celebration for the 25th anniversary of Narcotics Anonymous, and one of the things they wanted to do was they tried to get together all the oldest old-timers in the fellowship they could find. And they got about 15 of them together, and they wanted to get people on the record doing history workshops like this, talking about NA in the 50s and 60s. And to put it in perspective, the guy who was the newest newcomer among those 15 people was Randy's grand sponsor. So they did a workshop there, and I got a chance to hear people that went all the way back, and people like Bob B. and Sylvia M. and Gene H. Bob B. is the guy that wrote the story in the basic text. I found the only NA meeting in the world. Gene H. is in both the white booklets. It used to be in the basic text. They took him out of the sixth edition for some reason, which pisses me off, but that's another story. It's called The Vicious Cycle is his story. And so I got a chance to hear them speak, and that was good because, you know, they've all passed on now. They all passed on with over 50 years clean. And so they all stayed clean for over 50 years, and that's a long time. And, you know, I always pay attention to Narcotics Anonymous because, you know, I can hear things that are going to be important later. I remember Sylvia talked about how she had just retired and collected her first Social Security check. Not a Social Security disability check, a Social Security retirement check. And she talked about her new retirement, now she was loving that. And one of the big things in my life right now is I've set that goal. I've got about 10 years to go because I didn't do a lot of really positive financial planning, so I'm going to have to work till I'm 70. But now retirement is now part of my vision in recovery. I want to retire and hang out at meetings and do things here and be part of Narcotics Anonymous. Anonymous, and she showed me the way all that time ago. So I'm glad I was listening then, and I see people like Dennis that are living it now, and Mark that are showing me how to do it when I get there, and I look forward to it. With that, I'm going to stop. I probably overshot my 5 minutes. And one last thing, if anybody's interested, I brought copies of the first minutes from the first Free State Service, first Free State Regional Service Committee meeting. So if that's something that has any interest to you, I brought extra copies if you want to get one of those.
Can you tell he's an accountant? And even if you can't tell, I'm one too. One of the things I heard about Eric, and you think you don't picture this people, is that he was carrying a lot of weapons when he was out there, so he was pretty dangerous. we now have Marlene, who's going to tell us about the early days in our local fellowship.
Okay, thank you, honey.
Thank you. Hi, everybody. Thank you, Eric. I came in with Randy, and without Randy and some other people at my first couple meetings, I wouldn't be here today. I love Randy. He's like a brother to me. I was looking on the table, and they have a flyer that says Stepping Up to Service. It's a committee meeting, and at three, it says How Service Changed My Life. That's what I'm going to talk about. I wasn't sure what I was going to talk about. I always carry my little scrapbook with me. This is a public information scrapbook. It's very old, from 1981 through probably 83 or 84. And you can come and look at it if you want afterwards. When I came in, I didn't want any responsibility. I just wanted to get clean, and it was a small group of us. I might leave some people out, Vince and Shelley and Avon, Toots, Randy, Charles, you know, a lot of people. And we had an intergroup meeting, and everybody got picked to do a certain job. You're going to do H&I, you're going to do special events, and mine was public information, because I had experience writing and doing public relations. And I thought, I don't want to do this. That sounds like a lot of work, you know? I want something easy where you get recognition, because PI is all done behind the scenes. Anyhow, so we all did that. That kept me clean. That was the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm so grateful to NA for that opportunity, because I wouldn't have stayed clean otherwise. I needed to feel connected. It gave me a sense of purpose, which I didn't have when I came here. I had no self-esteem. But I was good at what I could do, and I wanted to do the best job ever, and I put my whole heart and time into it. I didn't have a job yet. I was unemployable. So I had lots of time to do public information. I studied the traditions. I need some water.
Yes,
please. Your mouth. Thank you. This is fun. Thank you. Okay. And I studied traditions with my sponsor. We didn't have a lot of information on how to do this yet, but I knew what not to do. And I started looking for different ways to do this. And I'll just hold this up, because this is so funny. This was so long ago, there was no social media or anything like that. Cell phones. Are drugs a problem? No area code, of course. And that was our answering service. And Shelley had H&I, I think. Yeah, with Shelley, I think. And we had beepers to wear. And the beepers would go off. When someone would call the hotline, then we would call the answering server. We would get so excited about that. We couldn't wait to get them to a meeting. And sometimes I would be there and go, I remember you from the hotline. We loved it. We interacted with each other. A lot of the committees, like literature and PI, were closely related. And I mean, we just were so passionate about this. We wanted to spread this message to everybody. Because it was so small when we came in. We didn't have a meeting, I think, on Monday in the area. I lived in Charles Village. I started a meeting. And we had a Thanksgiving dinner there, an event. I mean, just all these were firsts. You know, the first this, the first that. And a lot of things I did, I copied from AA, because their public information had been going on for a long time. And I changed some of the wording around. And I typed up everything. It was all done on a typewriter. No computers then. And I would send it off in the mail or drop it off, like WCAO, for example, public service announcements. Promotion, no. Attraction, yes. Very careful with wording. We had events, a lot of, you can look at this later, a lot of newspaper articles, knowing they can't use our last name. And when they came in person from the Baltimore Sun, they could not take any photos. Those were very strict, and they respected that. We didn't have any people that came in that tried to get over on us. But the Baltimore Sun, I think, was one of the first times that we were really recognized. It was a great article. One of their big reporters came to our meeting. He loved us. I think he was in recovery himself, maybe, Peter. And he wrote an article, and the hotline exploded after that. Got so many calls, so many calls. And this continued with other papers, just getting the message out there. You know, self-help fairs. It's easier today with social media, but we didn't have that. We had to spread it, the laundromats, anywhere you could put the little piece of paper with the hotline number on it. Then we had the police department. There was an event called Cycle of Hope. Baltimore City Police Department, who would ever think we'd be connected with them? And we weren't, but they had us, they hosted it, and Shelley and Avon spoke. I'll never forget this, because I thought, please, Shelley, keep it clean, you know, don't say the F word, okay? Just, and she did a great job, they both did. And they loved us. It really changed how they looked at addicts, because they saw people who were clean and doing all this. And it's called cooperation without affiliation. Not affiliated with them. That was clear. But we could cooperate with outside organizations without being affiliated. Libraries, women, alcohol, and drugs. And there's so many things that we, I mean, it just was amazing how it took off. And then meetings started and other meetings started. But it was the same group of us. And then more people got involved. Mark has done so much. Mark Hayden has been amazing. So many people have contributed. So my message is, get involved in service. There's so many ways to do it. There's so many things. I still do service. I don't do public information anymore. I did it for another fellowship. I did it for like 25 years. Mm. I'm a little burned down on it. I do other things. Find your niche. That was my niche. Everybody has something they're good at. You have talents, and in recovery, you can unlock your potential with that.
That's right.
And you can find it with service. And I'm brief, and that's all. That's it. Thank you for listening. I'll let Randy has a lot to say. Let him talk more.
Yeah, and that's it. Now have Randy come up and tell us his story of the history.
Hi, everybody. I'm Randy, and I'm an addict.
Randy.
Thank you, Eric and Marlene. You know, for me, Marlene was at my very first Narcotics Anonymous meeting ever. You know, there's still three people that are clean that was at that meeting. Louie, Marlene, and Ernest. You know, that's pretty amazing to have four people 44 years ago. I don't know how many of you all have a long home group, but you look back at it and see how many of them are still there, you know. And it brings a lot of gratitude. You know, I brought some, you know, I got so much shit, NA stuff, that I have up in cedar closets and hidden. So I brought these shirts that we had. This was our first Rock the Boat group. This is pretty amazing, but you know what the more amazing thing is? I used to wear that shirt.
That's really fucking amazing.
So, you know, that was a few pounds ago, you know. On that boat, we did a lot of things. We had, somebody got married on the boat. We had another cruise the next time. They were divorced by that time. Welcome to Narcotics Anonymous, right? You know, Marlene touched on it. You know, and her and I had this conversation on the phone the other night. The group of people that were here early on, God brought us together. There is no way this group of people in a million years would have ever been with each other. Never, you know? And we were able to come together as a group and from all walks of life, from all different experiences. You know, when Eric talked about the basic text being for simple people, my vocabulary is about like See Dick Run, you know, so the basic text was written for and about people like me. They said it was written on, what, like third grade level or something, Eric? I don't know, I heard that one time years ago. But the meaning gets through. But that group of people, we all, you know, none of us knew we had any skills other than, so we were very brand new. You know, we were a couple months clean. So the skills we had, we actually utilized some of those skills in Narcotics Anonymous. We were dope fiends. You know, we were entrepreneurs. I was a drug dealer, you know, so, and I had this void inside of me that I filled with NA, you know, and that is why I'm here today. You know, we had, you know, the service is just, I guarantee most of the people in here are involved in service. You know, you don't come to a fucking NA history meeting if you, you know, for no other reason. You know, there's something in here that attracts you. You know, I've had the opportunity that I was, God bless my life, to allow me to be here when I got here. You know, I don't know if I'd have made it if I didn't have everything that I needed to do. You know, that I didn't have the experience to participate. You know, I brought all this, there's a bunch of old stuff up here. You know, I tell people, you know, like sometimes I go to my home group and somebody's up there sober this or sobriety, and they see my eyes rolling in the back of my head. I'm pretty NA, but if you look at, like, we got this thing right here. This is when we first went into jails, we never had an NA meeting, and Maryland wouldn't let us into jails. Well, the gentleman that just passed away, Steve, was in the penitentiary. Somehow, I went in through AA. They took me. I didn't go to AA, but they wanted a drug addict to come into the meeting. So I was able to go into the meeting. So some AA guy took me in the first meeting. The next week, Steve's a dope fiend, true dope fiend. He got me to come back. Next week, I'm the only one there. 2 or 3 weeks go by, I'm the only one. There's no AA people. 2 months later, I bring NA literature. We changed the meeting from an AA meeting to an NA meeting. That's how we got into prisons in Maryland. You know, we dope fiend it. You know, that's what we do. So it worked. But I couldn't remember this. So they must have had an event there. I found these. I can't, like I say, I looked, found stuff I hadn't seen. It says Alcoholics and Narcotics Anonymous 4th Annual Awards Banquet. This is for the prisoners, you know what I mean? So, and, you know, our way of doing things, you heard the speaker earlier talked about that he wanted to go to a meeting in the jail, and he heard there were women there. Well, we actually did take women into the jail with us. And it was promotion and attraction, you know what I mean? So those meetings were big. So, you know, those kind of things, we did whatever we could to make our fellowship grow. And we had enthusiasm about it. Like I said, you would have never thought any of us would, but we all came together and did stuff. I brought a thing in here. I was looking at it. It's an order form for literature from... This was in 1981 where you had to order the literature, and you know, you would have had to mail that in. You know, actually, we got lucky that when we started with the literature, we were able to call, and Jimmy helped us out, and California would send us the literature and all this. And you know, so when this area started, when Narcotics Anonymous started here, we were all part of it. It was part of the Mid-Atlantic region. You know, Mid-Atlantic region went from Virginia to Maine. So when we had a regional service meeting, it could be in New York City, Boston, Virginia, Richmond. You know, sometimes we had them here, everywhere. You know, Philadelphia, it was great. You know, we had the opportunity. And, the cool thing about it was all these people in these different areas that had a year or two clean like us. A couple areas you went to, like where McKent Bob was from and some other people, there was, you know, they had 3, 4, 5 years clean, which was a lifetime to us back then. So we had the opportunity. So we were in the Mid-Atlantic region. I remember going in a snowstorm to New York. I mean, it was a blizzard. But we were going, it was Vince and I, you know, and we drove in that blizzard to get to that regional meeting. And, you know, as we grew as a fellowship here, you know, a lot of what our fellowship grew was from, like Marlene said, her efforts through PI. You know, we were on TV. You know, we had ads on television, on the radio. You know, it was in phone booths. Some of you don't know what a phone booth is. You know, it had it in the phone booths. It was everywhere. You know, and like she said, they operated through pagers. You know, so through that effort of PI, which, you know, and I'm not on social media, so the only way I would have heard about NA even today is if it was still in paper, you know, some form of a sign somewhere. So I know, hopefully we still do that, you know. But Narcotics Anonymous grew. You know, anybody that's heard me before, you've heard me say that I've been all over the world for NA. There's no place like here for Narcotics Anonymous. The one thing that I think, and you know, I've tried to analyze the situation and think why, you know, and I don't think I'm biased. I probably am biased, but it's true. But the one thing that I know we have here is a commitment to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I mean, people are committed to NA. You know, this is our way of life. And that's the difference that I see from a lot of other parts of the country or world that I go, you know, or have been. And you know, you come into a meeting and you're welcomed. And, you know, we all, you know, I wouldn't trade any of my experiences. You know, I didn't work any steps. I didn't do shit but service when I first got clean. You know, I didn't have a God. You know, I had Mark's brother. You know what I mean? He was my guide. You know, and that was not a very good guy. But we had servant. We did this stuff. And it was enough to keep us clean till we were able, you know, till I met, like, who became my future sponsor, Dutch, where they had actually worked steps. You know what I mean? We were the blind leading the blind. I wasn't willing to go really outside of what we had here to seek information, you know, because I wanted to get it here in NA. And to watch our fellowship grow, you know, I was at the World Service Conference in 1983 when the basic texts were given out. I've got a basic text that I've got that is probably my prized possession. You know, Jimmy Kay signed my book for me the first day the basic texts were given out. I still have it. You know, I have, like I said, I have literature that I've gotten. I've got meeting minutes, and I got all this shit. You know, and what's crazy is that, you know, to participate in that and to watch the growth. I mean, you know, when we, I'm not a literature. I told you I'm a C. Dick Run guy, but Vince was involved in the basic text. You know, we had people from all over the country. Early on, people liked what we had here in Baltimore. We had a lot of people, like Eric said, got involved in doing stuff. You know, Mark, you know, Vince, you know, and we all had our different things that we did. I mean, like I say, she was PI. You know, my job was literature when we started making assignments, maybe because I could afford to call long distance to California. I don't even remember how I got the reason, you know. And I could have, but, you know, then we had H&I, which was a big part of my life, you know, and then, and we all shared those responsibilities. So you had the opportunity to do all this stuff. You know, our newsletter, until this past year, was the longest running newsletter in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, Together We Can. You know, so there's an original newsletter up here. The guy that did that unfortunately died from drugs. His name was Paul O. Very involved in, you know, but like, unfortunately, like, we lose a lot of our friends through that, you know. And so the literature, like the basic text, you know, there's stories. I mean, we were able to get the text when we only had the white book and the pamphlets. You know, that seemed like enough at the time. You know, we had, I have a, there's a four-step thing up here I brought. It's not NA, but it was given out in NA. You know what I mean? And I don't know if you remember the first four step it had. Were you involved with animals? Yes. With sex? You know what I mean? So, I'm thinking, I don't remember that in my story, but it must have been in somebody's. Right? So, the stuff that we had originally, and I was talking about the sobriety. When Marlene talked about our first real event was the Thanksgiving event. We had Doreen and Carmelita. And on the flyer it said, come help us celebrate our sobriety. Like Marlene said, we copied so much shit from AA because it worked. Right. So we just critiqued it a little bit. You know what I mean? Even a lot of our literature that we have, we had to get guidance from somewhere. We looked at it, and they had some good ideas. We put our own spin on it, and that's how a lot of the stuff happened. The basic text did change things for NA. And it was, when Eric was talking, I remember a guy named Page stood up in front of the World Service Conference and said he didn't approve it. He tore the front page. It was the copyright page he tore out of the book. I thought, damn, this is something. But, I was out there. So in 1983, I had 2 years clean. I was at this conference, and there was guys from California that had 20 years or more. They were old guys like me, And at the time, I said, damn, them guys are old. Same thing. So, here I am 40 years later. I'm the old guy, And those guys have passed on, but they passed on something, that is just amazing. Our fellowship has grown. This book here, and I don't know why this. This is a world schedule for around the world. And there's not that many meetings in there. That was from 1986, but they don't have Maryland in there. I don't know how we don't have our information in that book, but or Virginia. They probably didn't like us at the time. Because we were controversial sometimes, but there's so much information. Like Marlene said, when I got here, I already had enough meetings to go to between Baltimore, Prince George's County, and Washington, D.C. That's how I was able to get enough meetings to go to. Which worked for me, but when we started to grow as a fellowship, when all those articles came out in the Baltimore Sun and all that stuff happened, we started to grow as a fellowship, and it just took off, and it was people that were committed. I have forgot more than I can remember. I know I've had the experience through service of meeting so many good people and so many people committed to doing this same thing. We could spend, there's a real historian there. Like you said, I might have lived it, but I don't have much good memory. I have good memories, but I don't have a lot of memories of how, when it happened or how, but I know it did. The hotlines and the jail meetings and, even like the first meeting, the first women's correctional meeting with Shelley taking a meeting into the women's penitentiary. She would take guys into there with her. So that was a treat on both sides of the jails for these people. So, but we did, being dope fiends worked for us. The way we made money early on in this area was through T-shirts. That's how we made our money. We didn't make money selling literature because there was no profit in it. We made money, selling literature, having, this design here. This was a design from a guy. So his name's John Jordan. He designed all of our shirts. I went to him and I said, we need something for NA. And he did biker T-shirts, right? Of course, you can see it has resemblance, and he did all of our NA work. He wasn't in the program, but he loved what we do. I still, I still talk to this guy. I mean, he still does my T-shirts for my company. This is, we've had a 44-year relationship, you know. But he, like, we had ideas, and he was the artist. He drew this shit up. And, you know, he, like, even all the, like I say, all the different stuff we had, the T-shirts, the, you know, I'm sure people have heard, you know, when we first started doing T-shirts, we also did ladies' underwear. Said, together we can on the back of it, you know? So we tried everything possible. You know, it probably wouldn't pass in the Me Too movement today, but we were, you know, it was crazy shit back then. Anything went. We did anything we could for attraction. Like I say, the dances and the Rock the Boat cruises and the, those set us apart. Those helped create the history. You know, history to me is looking back. You know, history is when something good comes out of it. You know what I mean? There's a lot of bad history. We got a lot of good history in Narcotics Anonymous. You know, my friend Steve died this past week. He had 43 years. He would have had 43 years clean. Like I said, I met him when he was in prison. And, you know, for me, Eric said it, those older folks that I met are dead. You know, I'm 70 years old. I don't know how much more time I got here, you know. So the history is in our literature or in what people's memories are. You know, if a young person hears what Eric had to say earlier, you know, and they can carry that thought, you know, carrying on our history, you know, and remembering how this, you know, how we walked through 3 foot of snow to get to the meeting, you know, I mean, like, you know, but it works. You know, this program works. The literature works. The, you know, if you put a schedule from 1981 next to a schedule in 2025, it's just unbelievable, you know, and our schedule is bigger than that world schedule, I'm sure, you know. But, you know, how much time we got left?
It's almost time.
Well, we got 5 minutes. What I'd like to see, if somebody has questions to ask anybody in here that's got time, we got 5 minutes. If you got a question for somebody that you might want to know about something with history, ask it now. You know what I mean? So, thank you.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, we have Marlene here, we have Randy, we have Eric, a wealth of information. We don't have a lot of time because I know some people are getting to the
banquet.
But if there's anybody who wants to ask questions, we can take a couple. Yes, Skip.
Skip and Ann, do you have archives, Baltimore Archives committee of any sort to, like, keep this stuff sacred?
Yes, that's good.
Like, you know, Randy was the past born, or, mm-hmm. you know, because verbally, you know, my memory ain't that good, but, yeah. You know, do we have archives?
Dennis, you're the archive man, right?
Yeah. Yes.
And Dennis, one of the places... there. And Dennis can answer that, but one of the places I think we keep some of our stuff is at the Service Center on Warwick Avenue. We got some there, but we have to get more, and we have to centralize it and protect it. Do you have anything on that, Dennis?
Well, right now, a lot of people know that we're putting a book out about the history of Baltimore.
Let's go.
So that's the reason why. We're holding on to all the archives and stuff, and hopefully we already got a proofread it. So now we got to actually get together and put the book out. So then we'll go from there.
And I think one of the ideas about that book is to make it kind of, Mrs. Tump, correct me if I'm wrong, we would put it online. It would be protected, but people are allowed to make it a living document in a right. sense, like they could say, well, wait a minute, that meeting wasn't at that location, it was here or whatever, and it can be corrected and updated, and you know, people can add more information. Now that's a goal,
right? Yeah.
Anything else?
How long has the Service Center been in Baltimore? How did it start?
Yeah. Well, it started on Lombard Street, right, Dennis?
November of 1987 is when we started on Lombard and Gallery Street.
And it's one of the only solvent ones that survived, you know, through COVID and all that stuff. A lot of them went down, and it's something that really, it's a miracle that they have kept that afloat.
Right. What we used to do is the literature was in my car, and I used to have to travel to Annapolis, Susquehanna, or Baltimore when we had an area service to dispute the literature. Finally, after a couple of years of doing that, and Randy and Vincent all got together a couple of times in a row to find a location affordable than where we'd be able to afford rent. And that's how we found the church on Calhoun Street. You know, we fixed it up, cleaned it up. And we, even though we're an attic, we have painters, we have plumbers, you know, and everything. So we finally put it together. And then we outgrew it for a couple of years, and that's how we wind up at Time Printers, because they had a bigger warehouse.
We're going to have to close this meeting just for, you know, those purposes. But remember, you got Dennis here, you've got Randy, you got Marlene, you got Eric, other people here who you can talk to anytime today or this evening or throughout, and keep in touch with them for more information. But what we'll do right now is we'll just get ready to close the meeting with a moment of silence followed by the Serenity Prayer. God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I can.